it's not our fault that we have these beliefs.
Mm.
When we're born, you know, the very typical analogy is that we're like an empty computer, and we're going to be drawing in information in order to create programs. Whoever raises us, more often than not, it's our parents, in those initial years of our lives, has a huge impact on us, whether they realize it or not.
Mm.
And although we're not talking when we're first born, and maybe for 2 years, maybe a little bit longer, but we're picking up the energy.
Welcome to the Marketing Your Practice podcast, where we guide natural health and wellness experts through the pitfalls of marketing. Each episode, you'll learn simple, effective, easily actionable, and heart-centered marketing strategies. And here's your host, Angus Pike.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, friends. Welcome to the Marketing Your Practice podcast. Now, to be honest, I look forward to each and every one of these interviews, but this one here, I'm super excited about. 2 weeks ago, I was staying down at some good friends of ours, Troy and George's, and in their spare bedroom next to the bed was this beautiful, brightly coloured book that I just could not ignore. It was leaping out at me like a beacon, and it wasn't until the next morning I picked it up and I started to have a read, and I read voraciously for an hour. And I meant to say to Georgia and Troy, can I take this book home? But I forgot to ask about it too. The book is all about the powers of belief. And over the last 2, maybe 3 years, since I've been coaching practitioners a lot more on their marketing, I wrongly came to the assumption that what people lacked with their marketing is the strategy and the tactics. I started teaching people all these things and they weren't implementing them because they had a bunch of stinky beliefs. And this book was articulating all the things that were inside my mind. Now, I have the author of that book sitting here with me right now. It's Gaynor Lawton. Gaynor, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. And I started exactly the same way. I thought the more ideas I give people to do when I started mentoring, the more I give them to do, it'll be great. And I came to exactly the same conclusion as you. They're not believing what it is that they're ideally hoping to implement. So yeah, changed my course altogether.
Well, I have a page of notes that I want and questions which I want to talk through with you today, some of them somewhat selfishly. But perhaps I think it might be valuable for our listeners, perhaps just to get a bit of your background story, that you just touched on it briefly then, and then we might kind of dive into some of the key concepts of the book and how we can help our listeners perhaps, you know, have a more fulfilling life in all areas of their life as well. So what kind of brought you to writing the book?
So my background is very much marketing and promotional for almost my whole working career, PR and management, PR management and fundraising and hands-on promoting. So back in 2004, I started a business called Marketing Naturally. And I called it that because I decided that I was going to help natural therapy practitioners and businesses to market themselves. And it was a purely selfish choice. I could have really chosen any market, but I'm a big believer of natural wellness still to this day, and have many, many friends who are practitioners. So I began the business in a marketing capacity. So I was, you know, helping people to promote themselves and adding all sorts of bits and pieces for them. And I've seen this pattern that I'm going to talk about almost from the beginning in 2004. And very typically of myself at the time, when I realized that I was having meetings with clients, we were setting out action plans, marketing plans, you know, coming up with brainstorming. And I was sort of setting a plan in motion for them. I'd go back a month later for our sort of next appointment, and I'd realize that they hadn't stepped into that plan. So I immediately started blaming myself. I was giving them too much to do. My plan wasn't clear. They weren't ready. And I did that for a couple of years. Not all the practitioners and not all my clients were doing this, but it was quite common. And then about 5 years ago, I got a new couple of clients. I'd sort of broadened Marketing Naturally so that it wasn't just now natural health and wellness practitioners. I also teach the NICE program, which some of your listeners might be aware of. It's a government-funded program for people wanting to start their business. And that's where I realized fundamentally marketing can fits in any business. It doesn't have to be, you know, for natural therapists. So by this time I'd grown my client list, but the same thing was happening. So I stopped and I looked at myself because I was clearly attracting these people. So that was my first, I thought, right, why am I attracting people that don't, they want to get to a certain level and don't seem to be able to or want to progress? Mm-hmm. So I looked at myself and I realized I had a lot of fears. We all have, it's natural. I had a lot of fears around whether I was good enough, whether I would ever make money. You know, I came from a working class, English working class background, very, very strong work ethic. You know, as far as I'm concerned, good values. But that wasn't enough. Lots of contacts, as I know a lot of people, but it just didn't seem to be helping me go forward. So I started to explore the doubts that I had, because fundamentally at the core of every doubt is a belief, just one. There might be 10, but you only need the one, the main one. And so I began reading and Googling anything and everything I could about the belief system and how I could get rid of a belief. And to be perfectly honest, all that I could really come across, lots of good information out there, definitely, but what I could really only came across was trying to override an existing belief in a positive way. So, and that works as long as you don't forget to continually override it. Mm-hmm. And I did this. I've done lots and lots of different things to try to clear beliefs. Now, I also know that sometimes as soon as you recognize the belief, it can dissipate. Mm-hmm. You know, so you don't always have to work hard on getting rid of it and checking it's gone. Sometimes you just go, oh my goodness, I've been thinking like that. And the next time it happens or a situation arises, you realize, wow, I didn't think like that this time. So sometimes you just have to recognize them. So what I did a lot of work on myself, my own fears, my own doubts, and I continued to work with my clients, but I didn't tell them that I was starting to look at them and their answers to questions and their attitudes towards and their, you know, watching them sort of be passionate about one thing and then the energy would go back down again with sort of, I suppose, their reality. And sometimes their reality was that they didn't have a partner that really understood what they did and what their business was. So there were real things, real reasons. And then I started to put together a program, and I've got some really beautiful friends who have been my guinea pigs, knowingly and unknowingly, over time. And I started to do this sort of work on, not work on them, but giving people exercises and saying, you know, if you do this, can you just let me know if anything changes? And all of a sudden things were happening for other people. And I thought, right, it's time. So I pulled up my big girl pants, took a deep breath and thought, right, let's just do that. And my fear that sort of is still a little bit there is I have not studied psychology. Everything that's in my book is from observation mm-hmm. and trial and error and my own feelings towards whether or not these things work, whether or not they worked for me. I cannot do anything without conviction. If I haven't got conviction, you know, I'm not being myself, right? Yes. I naturally have conviction. So in order for me to actually not only run these workshops as trials and with all my guinea pig friends, but when I put it into that book, I sort of had a conversation with myself, and that was, do you honestly believe these things work? And I do. There's no doubt. There's no doubt. So the exercises that are in the book that we're going to be mentioning are in one of the programs that I run called Believe in Your Business. And those exercises I have done many, many, many times. And I've trialed them enough times to know that it's good. It works. Mm. So what I want to do is just state that there's a difference between it's possible to identify your own belief. Absolutely. I have found that when I work with somebody through an exercise or through this whole program, we get to the belief quicker. I don't give it to them. I can see it. I can see it virtually straight away, but I have to, I get them to find it. Once they've found it, we, and I think because of the assistance or the facilitation with me, they feel it's happened rather than them going and taking exercise and doing it themselves. There's this connection that I have with people that I feel like, I'm going to say they trust me, but they're trusting what we're doing is working. And sometimes it does depend on the person themselves and their own, I suppose, alignment and their own belief in themselves to start with. When I was doing the affirmations, which was all I could find at first, as soon as I started to feel better, or the I felt that the positive affirmation was overriding the belief I'd found, I stopped doing the affirmations because I was feeling good and I didn't really need to. But I use a couple of analogies to try to explain beliefs to people. And one of them is that, you know, if something is there, let's say it's in a box, you've got something you don't want to look at, you put it at the bottom of a box, and you can put all these things on top of this this hidden belief. You can pile it up. As soon as you stop putting things on top, so it's like in putting a positive affirmation on, it will find its way out again. It hasn't gone. You're just hiding it more deeply. And we all know, and I know that for the nature of this podcast, your listeners are very aware that anything that's niggling us, if we don't deal with it, if we don't shed some light on it, it is going to end up in an illness of some sort or an ailment of some sort. And that's what a belief is as well. You know, that's what can happen.
So I wonder this, what I'm going to encourage our listeners to do over this next kind of 30 minutes or so is to try on the idea that maybe what's standing between you and the practice of your dreams, the life of your dreams, the relationships of your dreams, the health of your dreams, is not a strategy or a tactic, is not new information, but maybe it's a belief system. And there was a sentence, a paragraph inside of Gaynor's book here, and we'll dive into in a moment a little bit more about what beliefs are, how we identify them, because I'm interested, you give some great things inside of that. But let me read this paragraph, and I want our listeners to perhaps try this on. When you uncover what you really believe about money, about your competitors, and about your customers, you'll see why your business is as it is. So if you sit and have a think about your practice now, what are your frustrations? What are you wanting more of? What are you wanting less of? And even this moment, if you can think, what are my beliefs around that too? So how would you simply articulate what a belief is and where do beliefs come from? How do they get to us?
Yeah. So a belief is just a thought that we keep believing, that we keep thinking until it becomes our truth. Now, I can really simplify that without starting with the big, you know, I don't believe in I'll ever be rich within a practice, but you can really simplify that with something like if you've ever dropped a pen or, you know, clumsily done something, you've been carrying too many things, you've dropped something. You might do it to yourself or you might have heard somebody else say, oh, I'm so stupid, right? Now, that might sound, you might not even hear that person say it or you might not say it out loud, but sometimes we say those things to ourselves. Fundamentally, that's a belief we have about ourselves. We believe we're stupid or we're clumsy or, oh, I always drop things. Now, you might think, well, what's that got to do with anything? Well, if your whole body, every cell in your body believes and will respond to the fact that you're clumsy or you're stupid or you're always dropping things, it's going to restrict what you're going to allow yourself to do, right? So where these come from are a number of places, and I do outline this in the book, and I do have a conversation with people at the beginning of a session as to it's not our fault that we have these beliefs. When we're born, you know, the very typical analogy is that we're like an empty computer and we're going to be drawing in information in order to create programs. So whoever raises us, more often than not, it's our parents. It could be carers, it could be grandparents, but whoever raises us in those initial years of our lives has a huge impact on us, whether they realize it or not. And when you realize this and then you become a parent, that creates another layer of, oh my goodness, what does my daughter, you know, what have I given my daughter already? But we pick them up. We are empty. And although we're not talking when we're first born, and maybe for 2 years, maybe a little bit longer, but we're picking up the energy. So we can observe people who we love to be with because their energy is beautiful. And then we have people who we fear or we're not so comfortable with because maybe they've got a loud voice or they've got a strong energy. So it literally starts with that. But once we can communicate, that's when we really start to interact with these beliefs and make them our own. So by the age of seven, and this is a very well-known phrase or meme, whatever we call them these days, and that is, you know, give me a child to the age of seven and I will show you the man. Because by seven, that empty computer is full. So whatever we've experienced from then until seven, which is, you know, in a regular environment, we've got parents, we've got kinder, we've got friends, you know, our parents, friends, children. So we're starting to interact with other children as well. And we've started a primary school. So we're already restricted. Our parents, with all the goodness in the world, try to keep us safe. In fact, beliefs are to try to keep us safe by the person or the experience we've seen that's created the belief. So our parents are saying, don't touch that, it's hot. You know, don't climb that tree too high because you'll fall down. So there's a lot of restriction already. And I'm not saying it's wrong. Now, not only are those beliefs and those instructions direct to us, but we also pick up what's going on between our parents or between our parents and another sibling or between a sibling and ourselves or a friend and ourselves. So you realize, you know, you take something from a child and you see that they cry. So you give it back or your parent tells you to give it back. Now that immediately thinks, wow, you can't take things from people, or I don't deserve that because I've got to give it back so I can't have it. They have the nice toy or the lolly or whatever it was. Now this again is regular living, right? But those little things, if it happens twice, it's reinforced even more. Then we go to school or kinder first, and then we go to a primary school. And again, there's a set of rules where we can sit, when we can talk, to raise our hand to ask a question. Not wrong at all, because there's got to be some conformity and some control, both in our parents' lives and in a kinder and in a school. You can't just have 30 kids running around willy-nilly. There needs to be some control. But the power of the messages going into our minds is actually shaping us. Okay.
So how this, because I'm just cautious here too, Gani, because you and I could end up speaking the next 3 days about this. What I'm wanting to get people towards is that if, let's use an example of a practitioner who wants to grow their practice.
Yes.
And they've are willing to try on the concept that maybe what's between them growing the practice is not more tactics, but they're wanting to try and find out, I wonder what beliefs are acting as a handbrake or an anchor. Where would you start with somebody to identify those? They buy into the concept. Okay, I get that this is this, but how do I find it there too? Where do we begin with that?
One of the simplest exercises is to create what I call an outcome statement. So you will take a piece of paper and you open the sentence or the paragraph with, it's been 2 months since. And then you list what you'd like your practice or your life to look like. It doesn't matter what stage you're at now. So let's take a typical, I will give you an example of an outcome statement. It's been 2 months since I've been, my week has been full of clients. My waiting room is the most, you know, my waiting room is constantly full. My phone is constantly ringing. I'm working with the clients that I want to work with the issues that I love working with and helping them with. I've been able to give up my part-time income, and not all your clients will have that, but I know there's a lot that will. Mm. I've been able to give up my part-time income. I'm turning over, you know, 70,000 a year. You put the figure in there.
Mm.
Don't equate that to the number of clients. That's a big error, which if we've got time, we'll come back to. I can afford to, both emotionally, mentally, spiritually, and financially, I can afford to take my family on a 2-week holiday or whatever.
Mm.
So what you're doing is you're dreaming. That's what people think. Now, the way to get around that is to pretend. So I often say to people, just pretend. Okay. Just play.
A great word. Yeah.
It is because it puts a barrier there.
Yes.
Now, you've written that. The reason I say it's been 2 months since is because you're already in the middle of it.
Yes.
You're not going to say, I'm hoping this is going to happen. I'd like this to happen. That you've put your mind, okay, my waiting room is full.
Yeah.
And because it's full, it's allowing me to do this and this and this. I feel amazing. You know, my clients are just loving it. They're referring people. It's just growing. Now, when you've written that, or even while you're writing it, at the bottom of the page, draw a line and give yourself a little bit of room at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And as your voice in your head starts going, yeah, as if that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how are we going to go from one client a week to, you know, 35, right? So anything like that, it's not a belief, but it's something that's trying to sabotage what you're writing in your outcome statement.
Mm.
Just dot it at the bottom of the page. So ideally what you end up with is a beautiful, what might seem like a dream, but it's a beautiful outcome statement. It's where you're heading, right? You can call it a goal if you want to. I don't use that term. But to me, if you just say, this is an outcome statement, this is where I'm going to be. You don't have to say it's in 2 years, in 5 years. If you want to tell the universe that you want to put a time on it, the universe will put a time on it. But if you say, I want to grow my practice, the universe will start helping you immediately, in my opinion. Now, the most important thing here is you need to be able to read that out loud, just to yourself.
Mm.
Now, as you read it out loud, again, what's going to kick in are all the little doubts. Well, how's that going to happen? Who's going to come to you? You know, that, jot those down. And this is a little process that at the end of writing that and reading it out loud, you look at what's written at the bottom, right? And you've got things like, there's plenty of other practitioners better than me. I haven't been doing this long enough. Well, I know nothing about this. And all my clients keep coming to me with this issue. And I don't know anything about that. So you just take one of those statements and think to yourself, why is it that I'm thinking I'm not good enough?
Mm-hmm.
For example, that's a huge one, I'm not good
yes.
enough. And it might take you a week, it might take you 5 minutes, but I'll tell you what will happen. At some point, once you've identified, why have I written I'm not good enough? Something will come to you. You don't have to go and find it. You're asking the universe, okay, can you shed some light on why I don't think I'm good enough? And one time you're going to have, it might be a school teacher, it might have been an ex-boyfriend or girlfriend, it might be somebody who makes a statement to you that you absolutely thought, wow, okay, maybe I'm not that good. Now, it mightn't have been you being good enough as a practitioner. It might have been you good enough as a boyfriend or a girlfriend, good enough as a sibling, good enough as a daughter or a son, good enough as a part-time shop assistant. It's the term good enough, right? So as I said before, if I'm there or if you do it with somebody, because there's a way in the book of you actually doing some of these exercises with a trusted friend or a partner, for you to start looking at each other's beliefs, the energy around how you're speaking to each other. So finding it is one thing, and as I said before, maybe it will dissipate once you've found it, but you will honestly find where that belief originated. You will find that.
Yeah. You've got another interesting sentence, which this was a great discovery for me a number of years ago, that you said, the feeling is often the clue to the belief behind the thought. Yeah. I notice for me sometimes I might get up early to go to work and I've got this funk about me too, that for a long time I feel funky today there too. I now know to, if I just look a little deeper, invariably what's happened, if I've told myself something beforehand, maybe I've told myself, oh, you didn't get enough sleep last night, so you're going to be tired today. You know, I've told myself something else that has led to the feeling, but I used to never investigate the feeling here. So I wonder for many of you, if you write down, you know, what this practice looks like. For some of you, you might just get a feeling about it, like, you know, maybe it's in your, I tend to get mine in my solar plexus is where I feel it there too. And then maybe it might be just worth asking then, like, what did I just tell myself? What did I tell myself before I kind of got that feeling? So you mentioned that for some of us, once we identify those beliefs, that can be enough to make them dissipate. Yeah. Let's assume that we've got some beliefs that are a little bit more ground in there as well. Yeah. How do we get rid of some of the more stubborn ones?
Okay. So the feeling is the emotion that is wrapped around the belief, in my opinion. I was speaking to somebody the other day about, you know, I'm getting all these memories about a partner who's just left. I'm getting all these memories about my partner. Now, you can have a memory. You'll not get rid of the memory, but you need to be able to clear the emotion around it. And it's exactly the same thing. When you believe something, it often makes us feel sick or feel, you know, anxious. It does come, solar plexus and gut are very often the two places. Now, sometimes I've woken up and I've thought, why do I feel that? Before I've had any thoughts or before I realize I've had any thoughts. Mm. And it might be that today, I've got to go and have that conversation with so-and-so and it's a difficult conversation. So your body knows prior to you actually consciously going, oh yes, I've got that meeting today.
Yes.
Body hears and knows everything. So when you find a tough, or when you find, it's not so much a tough one, it's an embedded one. It's probably been there since childhood.
Yep.
It started off as a very tiny, let's use the analogy of say a stone, okay, little pebble, little stone. When it was first planted, or even a seed, when it was first planted, it was a little seed. So the first time you heard somebody talking about not being good enough, for example, it was tiny and you got over it. And then something else happened, which sort of connected to that same thing. Oh, wow, that's me not being good enough again. So this little seed grows a little bit more until in the end, you've got quite a solid mass of energy inside you somewhere that anytime somebody talks about you being good enough, you kind of go, oh, and it triggers this big bolt with the big ball now of energy and starts you getting a bit fearful. You know, would I be good enough to go and give a talk at the practitioner association this year? Or would I be good enough to, the answer is yes, you would, but there's a lot in you that's questioning whether you could or not, but the answer is yes, you could. So once you've realized that over time, this one belief has actually got bigger, it's the same belief, it's just that now there's a lot of them all together. You don't have to clear every single one back down to the core one. If you can find the core one and the first time it was ever said to you, it will domino effect clear all the others. Okay. Now, this is the one that you're looking for that might dissipate. If it doesn't dissipate, what I use is a way of you actually focusing on that ball of energy and recognizing it. Now, energy is very intangible, but when you've got a knot in your stomach, or when you're feeling sick, or you've got a pain somewhere, you know, it doesn't have to be intangible. You can actually focus on that. And really, I say to people, use your imagination. People don't need to sometimes because they can read energy. Use your imagination or pretend that pain has got a color to it, it's got a shape to it, has got a texture to it. connect to that pain, not the word of the actual, the sentence or the belief, not so much that than the feeling. Connect to that feeling. And then when we do our, I didn't send you a book because you got the ebook, but anybody that buys the book, I send them a couple of these as well. Okay. So this is just a juggling ball type, what do they call them? Hacky sacks over here.
Yes.
Yep. So it's like a hacky sack / juggling ball. Now, if you haven't got that, you use a rolled up pair of socks. But as far as I'm concerned, what you do is you identify this feeling that you've got and you connect to it. You use your imagination. You bring it up to your dominant arm shoulder. So if you're right-handed, up to your right shoulder. You imagine that whole ball of energy coming down your right arm into the palm of your hand. You transfer it into this ball or your pair of socks, something soft that's not going to bounce back and hit you. And then you throw this sort of down and away from you. Now, the reason a lot of people like this, and I am going to say particularly men, and I say it because men, we think, women and men think differently, and we all know that. It's not right or wrong, but men prefer tangible. So do a lot of women. So do a lot of women. But for me, I find this works perfectly with men. I've had men throw this ball and burst out crying.
Wow.
Yes, really burst out crying and gone, oh my God, I can just remember my father saying to me that I'll never have any money because I don't work hard enough. You know, and it's just, they can't help it. They're not thinking about it. It just happens. And I think the process of throwing something does a number of things. It makes you feel like, oh, it's gone.
Yes.
Or, you know, you can just, you can get rid of some sort of whatever it is. And you can have 3, 4, 5 of these on your lap because one throw might not be enough. So the idea is you do that, you go back to, you center yourself again, you go back to that belief and you feel, is it still in your belly? Is that feeling still there? You might have to do that a couple of times. It might have moved. It might have moved to your throat. You know, throat is another area that's quite common for people to say, oh, I feel like I want to cough. I feel like my throat's all dry. I've got a sore throat. Then again, you don't necessarily have to use the ball. You could actually breathe it or cough it out.
Right.
And I often find myself saying to people, look, just humor me. Just, you know, just do it. Just, no one's watching. Doesn't matter. People feel silly. Just do it. And then if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But I know that in enough people, I've seen it working in myself, it's worked. So what you're doing in essence is acknowledging that there's a ball of energy there and it is connected to not feeling good enough as the example we're using.
Yes.
So the more of the energy that we can get rid of, the more that you can breathe out, cough out, throw out, the next time you focus on it, the intensity of the emotion will not be as strong. And I'd like to be able to say, I promise that. Because I honestly, I you know, as much as I can promise, I do promise it. Now, if it's still there, then you just do the exercise again. You don't do it 10 times in a row. Give yourself a couple of hours, you know, allow your body, you've just taken some energy out of your body. Just allow everything to sort of, you know, sit back and what's the word? Recalibrate.
Mm.
Just process, recalibrate. It might be a day before you try it again. Try it again. And it will be, the feelings might still be there, but they will be less, right? And the other thing I want to talk to just mention is that when we take on a belief, we have something at the back of, I can't say this word without pointing to the back of my neck, but we have a filter called a RAS, right? A reticular activation system.
Yes, now, I wanted to talk about that today. Great.
Right. If we didn't have that filter, we would explode and implode all at the same time because we are surrounded by so much information. So many, our senses would just, they wouldn't be able to cope.
Mm.
So what we feed our filter is what our filter allows in or keeps away.
Mm.
So if we tell, if our filter has grown up with the, or if we've grown up with the thought, which becomes the belief, we're not good enough, then our filter will keep us safe from having that shown to us again, if you like. It keeps us out of areas that might make us feel not enough. It keeps us in safe places. So once you start to release the energy of a belief, the filter also goes, okay, we're opening up this area up a little bit. I don't have to protect this person so much of putting themselves in a situation where they're going to be shown that they're not good enough. They're taking that away, which means brilliant. We can step into more opportunity because we're not going to be as afraid. With our filter system, it's very easy for us to, we've all experienced this. We might have been with some friends and we were laughing and joking about, some fancy yellow sports car. And we're just joking about it. And we're maybe having a drink or we're having lunch together or something. And we're just sort of saying, oh, that would be great. Imagine going for a drive in one of those fancy cars, something like that. Again, this is a way of you checking without getting too emotional and too personal into this. I can honestly say that within 2, 3, 4 days, you will probably see a fancy yellow sports car.
Mm.
Because what you've told your filter is, we're interested in this car. We'd really love to have a drive-in one or at least see one, or, you know, it's something we're excited about. And so our filter does the work for us. We don't have to go looking for it. Our radar will be out there looking for this fancy car. And when you see that fancy car, for me, just do a thank you. Just laugh and say thank you.
Mm.
Because it's working. So if it can work on something that doesn't emotionally affect you, you're testing it, and there's a lot of people who test the universe, which I do myself, and I find it interesting that we have to, but we do. Once you start doing this bigger work, you will realize that energy has shifted around that belief, and all of a sudden opportunities are presenting to you. Now, with those opportunities, you can always say no. And I say this to people, how lovely would it be to have the opportunity and say no, thank you, then never have the opportunity at all.
Mm. Gaina, is it once we've gone through this process and we've helped to let go of belief systems that are not serving us,
Yeah. Is
it important that we then start to install belief systems that will serve us? Is that a next step that we would want to take?
Brilliant question, Angus. And that's what everyone says. You know, it's, I'm not good enough. So shall I start saying to myself and start believing I am good enough? I can do this. So I'm not saying do or don't, but I am going to give you my favorite analogy. So if you can imagine a river, and it doesn't matter whether it's running slowly or whether it's a whitewater raft river, just imagine the river. The reason that water is running the way that it is, or flowing the way that it is due to the boulders and the rocks of all different sizes within that river. Those boulders are directing but also dictating how the water flows. So if there's a huge boulder, the water might be able to go over it if it's running fast enough, if the flow is fast enough. Otherwise, it has to sort of slow down, separate, go around the boulder, and then come back together. Now, if we removed a boulder from a river, the flow of the water would change. Okay, so if we move that great big one, that it would probably go through a little bit quicker because it wouldn't have been had to be diverted.
Mm-hmm.
So the analogy I use for beliefs is your beliefs are like boulders within your body. Now, once you've felt one, so feeling that feeling in your stomach, if you imagine that is, the equivalent of a boulder, once it's been removed, the flow of your own energy is not going to be as directed because it's going to have a clearer pathway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's say we get rid of I'm not good enough, which was a very big boulder. It had been there a long time.
Mm.
By replacing it with I'm great, I am good enough, I can do this, each of those are little boulders. Okay. So as the boulders are replaced, even if they're small ones, as soon as you find yourself again questioning, am I good enough, you're going to bring back that doubt. So our ideal situation, and believe me, I'm not there, but our ideal situation is to not carry any beliefs about anything and live in the moment and allow things to unfold. And I've got one quick analogy that when I was doing this work with a lady, she was up in the Gold Coast and we were doing the program on Skype. And she was she worked as a consultant, but she would go to corporates, and she was telling me about the Christmas party that she went to. And there was a hot air balloon there as part of the entertainment. So it went up so many hundred feet and then pulled back down. And she said, I just went, oh, wow. Got into it, into the basket, and was, you know, started the journey up. And that's when she realized she had no beliefs around being in a hot air balloon. So she didn't approach it going, oh my God, I've heard this is scary, or oh my God, I've heard this is fantastic. She just did it. So that's, to me, was like my brilliant, I was wanting an analogy of someone with no beliefs about something. And that came to me. And okay, it's not going to affect your practice, but you can see that by not having a boulder, positive or negative, belief positive or negative, you just experience the situation without any preconceived or fear or expectation, because a positive belief also creates expectation. And how do you get disappointed? If you've got an expectation. Yeah. So without any boulders at all, that's to my, in my opinion, that's where we're all heading for, boulder free.
Yeah, it's that lovely kind of mindfulness in the moment there too, that I can see just how damn attractive that is there too. I want to see if I can kind of do a little summary of what we've spoken about so far, and then perhaps encourage our listeners if this is resonated with them in any way about where they can find their book, your book, and perhaps some other ways they can work with you as well. And, you know, we start this whole concept off to saying that, you know, it's quite possible that what's standing between you and what you want is not a lack of information, of tactics, of skills and stuff. It may well just be a belief system in around that too. I love that idea of, you know, writing out what that life might look like. What is it that you're looking for? You know, it's been 2 months since, describe that, and then check in with yourself about why do you think you can't have that. On page 99 of your book, you've got a whole bunch of great questions to ask. Where did that thought come from? Do other people in my family think this? Is it serving me? How would I feel if I didn't think that? There are a whole bunch of questions that could perhaps help you identify what's going on underneath it too. The thing I'm looking forward to doing afterwards is that process to let go of it. Where does that thought that I have when I find it, where does it exist inside my body? How can I put a color to it? How can I feel that move up through my body, to my shoulder, to my arm, to throw it out, to cough it out, those kind of things there as well. So have I missed anything in kind of, I know they're just the beginning steps. There's a lot more in your book that you go through. Is that a fair summary kind of what our audience can at least start to play with from now on?
Look, it is. And I think the other thing that unfolded for me as I started to do this work was that, and you'll have seen this in the book, not all the exercises are about work. So, you know, we might be out socially having a conversation about sport or something just random. And I might say something, or I might hear you say something that'll say, you know, oh gosh, imagine that amount of success. We're not talking about our businesses and our work. We're talking about somebody else. But the fact that we can say that uncovers to me that there would still be something in that person, it could have been me that said it, about allowing myself to be successful. So beliefs are always popping up. And very often they come in sarcasm, humor, flippant, under your breath. And so when I repeat them back, when I'm working one-on-one with someone, they will swear blind they didn't say it.
Yes.
And I said, you did. You know, so very often, if they're obvious ones, that's one thing. But it's the little ones around the edges that can help you find the big ones as well sometimes. So, yes, it's they don't always have to come out through the exercise that you've done, but that is a really good one to start. And everyone's got a dream of what they want their practice and or their life to look like.
Yes.
So it's a very simple place to start.
Yeah. I love it.
Just keep one ear open onto your inner voice and what it's saying.
It's great. So I want to encourage our audience. Gaynor's book is called Believe in Your Business. I'll make sure I have links along here. There, for those of you that are watching on the video, you can see this beautiful bright yellow color there as well with a big lemon on it, with this metaphor. She runs through that, you know, when we squeeze a lemon, we get lemon juice out of it because that's what's inside. And when we squeeze ourselves, what comes out is what's inside. I love that metaphor as well. If you feel like you need a little bit more one-on-one work with this, Gaynor has a ridiculously, I feel like she should triple her prices, but you, is it an hour that they can have with you to work through this step-by-step for $99?
Right. So yes, to give you a taster, it's a 2-hour session. It's
even better. Wow.
99 is the special price, obviously. So if you just have 2 hours, you will totally get the concept.
Yes.
And then some people are very self-disciplined and can go off and do that themselves. Other people might have already bought the book or want to buy the book. It would, again, would be easier for you to then take you through the rest of the exercises through the book. Or I do the whole 12 session program as well. So, but the first 2 hours, as a 2-hour intro, $99, and you will be surprised at what is uncovered and what you believe. And often it can end there. You know, that can be a life-changing thing as well, just clearing those beliefs. So, yes, by all means, that's available.
Yes. Well, the book for me was life-changing. It was so great. There were some key distinctions in there that were really helpful for me. So at the very least, you know, I want to encourage our audience to, the best website for them to look at the book, just for those that would like to know, rather than checking the notes.
So if you go to believeaustralia.com, you'll find that's my website with all my work on there. If you want to go direct to information about the book, it's within that website, but it's believeinyourbusiness.info. So Believe in Your Business, which is the name of the book, .info.
Great. I'll have all those kind of links in the show notes there as well. At the very least, gang, I would really encourage you to kind of run through that outcome statement that Gaynor spoke about to perhaps find out, you know, is there something in the way that's not a tactic or a strategy that's perhaps holding you back there as well. The book is a wonderful investment. And for those of you that it makes sense perhaps to have a couple of hours with Gaynor there too, then I would highly encourage you to do that. Gaynor, on behalf of my audience, I want to thank you for continuing to grow and develop and put all the time and effort and energy that goes into writing a book. It's a great book. It's a wonderful read as well. Any final thoughts that you would like to leave our listeners with today?
I think the outcome statement is something that is a definite. Start with that and read it a week later, other things will come up. And what is coming up are the things that are coming between you and that dream. And they might be big, they might be small. And you might find a different way of clearing that belief. But I think if you start with that, it will create a change immediately. And immediately to me is within 2-3 days. Mm-hmm. Not if you're sitting at home on the couch, not interacting with people, that you won't see the change. But if you're out and about and doing things, you'll begin to see a difference. So yes, I think the outcome statement is the best thing. I also just wanted to say as well, I do this on Skype or Zoom or whatever we use at the moment. So you don't have to be face-to-face. I love doing the face-to-face work. I'm obviously in Mornington, in Victoria, but yes, it works just as well online. So yeah.
Yeah, I can see that's absolutely the case. Well, Gaynor, I look forward to hopefully one day meeting you in person, given that we're more or less in the same neck of the woods as well. And you've told me too, there's a new book that you're currently working on as well, which is very relationship-based. Is that right? Yeah,
so that one's called Believe in Your Heart.
Yeah.
Same principle. What do we really think about relationships?
Yeah.
And I've started writing this book and my intro is really, who am I to write this book? I've been single for 12 years,
yes. Right?
And I've just stepped into it and I've just met someone. Now, I'm not saying this is going to be the all and end all, but it's already, yeah. I can see that things are happening. So yeah, that's called Believe in Your Heart. The program's available now. And it's not just if you're single, it's if you're in a relationship with your wife, that you, it's finding who you are within the relationship. Yes.
Yeah. And don't we tend to write and teach about what we need to learn? And
oh, absolutely. Most,
yeah, that's me too. So, hey, Gaina, thank you so much. Have a wonderful afternoon and I look forward to seeing you soon. Gang, all the notes on how you can contact Gaina will be in the show notes. And please, please, you know, I don't do this all the time, buy a book. And if it resonates with you, reach out to Gaina and have one of a session with her to help you work through this stuff. I think you'll find it incredibly powerful. Gaina, take care. Have a wonderful afternoon.
Beautiful. Thank you. Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, you have to come and check out the Community Influencer Program. It's my monthly coaching program where we take all this material and I'll work one-on-one with you to apply, implement, systematize, and help guide you and your practice to the next level. Now you can join me on over at adiomedia.com/join. That's adiomedia.com/join. I'd love to see you in there.